It's very nice to be here with you today. As was already mentioned, my name is E.J. Reedy, and I'm here with the Ewing Marion Kauffman Foundation. I am a data person, so I apologize in advance if I focus too much on the data, but I think that you'll find that there's really actually so little data that that's probably not going to be too much of a threat. So the Kauffman Foundation, for those of you that are not familiar with the organization, we're the largest foundation in the world that has a focus on entrepreneurship and innovation. And our particular interests lie mostly in better understanding entrepreneurship and innovation here in the U.S. So we're located in Kansas City, Missouri, but very involved in a lot of different activities here. So my particular task today is one that I think is really quite quite complicated. But I'm going to I'm open to questions as we go through. There's a lot more information available on entrepreneurial career paths of women than I'm going to have time to present. So first, I'd like to just delve a little bit further in detail into high-tech firms and what we know about gender. Then we'll move into the preliminary results of one specific study using a new data set called the Kauffman Firm Survey. And then, specifically go from the kind of high level down to very specific information about what we are learning about gender in young high-tech firms. And I should say in advance, I'm not the primary researcher behind a lot of this research, so I would like to thank my colleagues, Alicia Robb and Susan Coleman in particular. And many of you know Lisa Mitchell or Sandy Miller from the Kauffman Foundation, who also send their greetings. Now, I should actually back up just a little. Before we get it too much into the literature, I just wanted to give a little bit of context. So in 2002, which is the most recent year that we actually have statistics available from the government, from the Census Bureau, that actually allow us to look at the gender ownership of businesses here in the U.S., so 2002, already 6 years old. In 2002, the Census Bureau estimates that there are 6.5 million privately held women-owned firms in the U.S. Now, what's really exciting about that number is that's a huge increase. So we see that women-owned firms now account for 28% of all firms. So here we're talking about self-employment and kind of larger businesses all kind of aggregated together. However, while that's increased about 20% from 1997 to 2002, we do see that revenues for women-owned firms increased less than 15% compared to an overall increase of about 22% over that same time period, and unemployment in women-owned firms grew by only 1% in that same time period. So at the very aggregate level, we see some evidence that women in business are seeing some real advances in the statistics. However, we do see some evidence that maybe there's some particular aspects of growth that are perhaps not as positive. So from that, let's go ahead and jump into the literature a little bit here, looking specifically at women's entrepreneurship and high tech.
Now, for those of you that are involved in the research here, there really is very little information that is available on women in high-tech enterprises. And unfortunately, most of the research that is available is based on convenience samples, very specific regions and the like. I should say that I'm not going to get into the whole topic of self-employment because I think what we're really interested in here are the more higher growth types of companies, so companies that are going to be employing others, although there is more of a literature out there available. And I would mention, just if you didn't pick up out at the front, we do have a longer report called Sources of Financing for New Technology Firms, a Comparison by Gender. And so a lot of this literature is reviewed in there, and the full citations are available. All right, so getting into the previous research, again, kind of focusing on more recent things. So here, Ty and Sims, look at employees from 7 high-tech firms and, specifically find evidence that, women are more likely to hold different types of positions within the companies. So, more likely to hold supervisory, but less likely to hold senior management positions. Probably a finding that I think would resonate with a lot. Fireherm and Vic interviewing high-tech Generation X women managers, you know, find evidence that, you know, perhaps the high-tech culture is not some conflicts in the high-tech culture, you know, for these particular women, with 50% of those interviewed considering looking for other career opportunities. Cross and Linehan, 2006, you know, look within the high-tech sector at different occupational segregation. So here we're again, you know, finding issues of work-life balance, you know, finding start to emerge issues around family-friendly policies, and also the kind of subtle aspects of high-tech, you know, business, which, you know, might be underlying some of these other other issues. And again, I'm not going to spend a lot of time here. There's, you know, longer references available in the full research. Hollowell, 2006, looking at an English population here, you know, find that there's different preconceptions about high tech and gender. And I think actually there's talking to I think we'll have some good research presented on this topic in the next couple of days. You know, women report having trouble being taken seriously, as well as assumptions about their lack of entrepreneurial skills and just overall dissatisfaction with a male-dominated culture. Mayer, 2008, and probably, I think these findings particularly resonate with a lot of the research that we're looking at now. You know, women-owned high-tech firms, smaller by average revenues and employment, you know, in the major kind of high-tech regions, Silicon Valley, Boston, D.C., and Portland, as examples. Women entrepreneurs actually participating in different aspects of the high-tech sector, and this is something that I'll come back to a little bit, but definitely is something that I think we're finding with, you know, more likely to participate in software, computer systems, management, and consulting, as well as research, versus manufacturing, which is also part of the high-tech. And these sectoral differences can actually have a lot of ongoing impacts in terms of the income potential of the particular businesses. And then I'll just kind of wrap up this brief research review, talking about the Diana Project. For those of you not familiar with the Diana Project, this was about a 10-year project looking at women in venture capital, largely. And so here, you know, as was kind of alluded to in the introduction, we find that, you know, women-owned firms are a very small minority of the overall venture capital, backed firms, with only a little bit of evidence of some change, and unfortunately no more recent data. So summarizing these these surveys, we see that, you know, women often have a difficult time getting different types of management experience or senior management experience in high tech, which could potentially be impacting the relation to or attractiveness to external providers of capital. Further, you know, the particular aspects of high tech that women business owners are going into, particularly different industries, but also the formal and informal networks are showing some real differences in access to capital. So, that's, very, very quick overview. And again, if you have questions as we're going through this, please do let me know. You know, in the larger context, and this is, I don't want to get too large here, but we see a lot of things emerging around gender. So there's a whole aspect of studies available looking at interest in the population and different aspects of entrepreneurship, of starting a business, of becoming self-employed, all of these different things. And, particularly I think that research is really showing for the gender, when we put a gender lens on where the barriers are at, it really is around the growth opportunity. So you do see women, reporting to be involved in startup activities at less rates than the male population, but not significantly less. But really, where the biggest differences, at least in the data, show up are in the growth companies. So all of this kind of brings me to why the foundation in 2003 started a project called the Kaufman Firm Survey, of which I'm a principal investigator on. So the Kaufman Firm Survey is a longitudinal data collection project following 4,928 firms that were started in 2004. The overall motivations of the project really were to get at aspects of, you know, the firm dynamics as well as individual owner characteristics. So, you know, a lot of interest in firm financing, you know, the high-tech industries, you know, different aspects of performance and survival over time. Lots of information on innovation, or at least as best are able to be captured in survey data. So I'm sure many of you in the field know it's very hard to get at some of these topics using a general population survey. But so this is one of our largest projects. It is ongoing, so we're in our fifth collection period right now, continuing to follow roughly 3,000 firms, which are still a part of the panel, still operating and actively participating. So at the end of the eight-year panel, this will be the largest and longest longitudinal panel on new businesses in the world. To give you a little bit better sense of the type of data that you know, we're collecting, we have information on all the owners of the firm, you know, their educational background, number of startup experience, industry experience, you know, size of the firm, you know, firm characteristics like legal form. On innovation, you know, we'll be presenting some of the basic kind of intellectual property statistics today. However, there is a lot more rich information on licensing in, licensing out, investments in R&D, you know, a lot of detail on debt and equity injections over time. And so what I'm presenting today really is only kind of an introduction, and hopefully this will be extended over the coming years. But I would also point out that this is a publicly available data set. So, you know, this is something that hopefully we can find some great people to get involved with. We certainly are excited about it and are happy to present some of the some early findings here. So, so this is just a general overview of the types of industries in the Kaufman Firm Survey data, and this is going to be really the last time that we kind of only look at all industries. From here, we're going to dive deeper into high tech. So, I just wanted to point out here, you know, kind of the gender differences in industries, you know, across the population. You know, we do see some, you know, some evidence that, you know, female-owned businesses are going into, you know, more into retail trade, something that, you know, is kind of bared out in a lot of the government statistics, but also, you know, a higher percentage into healthcare and social assistance, you know, really some potentially growth industries, I would suspect, over the coming years, and other, you know, things like other services. So, you know, just point out that, you know, 5,000 cases, a lot of potential and a lot of different industries available for analysis here. So we're going to be looking mostly at the high tech definition here within the sample. I just point out the different ownership percentages that we do see. Overall, we see about 30% of these new businesses that were started in 2004 having a primary female owner. So so again, this could be teams, as you know, as Lillian pointed out. There are a lot of companies that are started as teams. I think about 35% of our sample has some team component to it. However, we are assigning here a primary owner. Within high tech, you see the percentage of women-owned businesses falls quite considerably to about 15%. And unfortunately, due to sample size, we can't actually present biotech and other high tech at a disaggregated level. But I did just want to point out, and you know, this is kind of the industries that we're you know, aggregating together to come up with the high tech. Obviously, this is way more detail, and although I don't think I've ever been on a presentation where you could probably actually read this, it looks like. So perhaps I should have actually planned to have typed that small. But you can actually see here that there's a lot. Within high tech, we have a lot of different aggregations, and so we know that we are missing that we're seeing a lot of different stories play out within the data. However, we do see some things that come up in the aggregate that we find, you know, very interesting. And I would actually just point out, so actually in the study and the handout that you have, we actually used a different definition of high tech. So in preparation for this workshop, we actually were getting feedback and determined that we maybe should re-examine the high tech definition that we had. So what I'm presenting, I would say, is really kind of preliminary research. If you've tried to define high tech, there really aren't a lot of established definitions available, which is particularly frustrating. When we actually went through and did our study, we were using a Bureau of Labor Statistics definition, which unfortunately was from the early 90s and led to a real manufacturing kind of bias in the high tech definition. So this is why we've kind of gone back to the drawing board and presented some updated definitions here. So here we have some basic overview information about primary ownership characteristics by gender using the Kauffman Firm survey. So all firms on the left two columns and high tech on the right two. What you see are some interesting things. So owner age, very consistent across the sample. You know, basically, the most common time period in which people start businesses is, you know, actually their 40s, 30s, you know, late 30s to early 40s. I think that's one of the common misconceptions about entrepreneurship is it's, you know, only people that are 25 or 30. No, it's most often that these are really people that have a lot of industry experience and it's a part of their overall kind of career path. Average hours worked per week. We start to see some differences here in the high-tech sector for male and female with slightly less number of hours worked per week reported amongst female business owners. Previous work experience, again, you know, very high level of work experience in the particular industry, but again, starting to see some differences here across gender. Really interesting differences in terms of the number of startups that owners have been involved with before, and I'd say, you know, really this is one that I'd like to, you know, expand into, look into further in terms of some of the gender differences. So, you know, the average high-tech, you know, business owner has actually already been, the male business owner has actually already been involved in, you know, like 1.27 startups, and we see for women-owned businesses that the previous experience is really much more limited. And particularly limited when you look at startups in the same industry. And then you've got some basic information here on educational attainment, and what emerges on the gender statistics here is that actually our women business owners are a more educated group on the average. Thinking about the types of businesses that are started, so one of the things that's kind of unique about our panel is that we are actually agnostic to the legal form that the business took in startup. So what we were actually how we screened our sample was you had to have taken a legal form in 2004, but you could not have had any prior legal form. So we actually track these businesses as they change from sole props to partnerships to LLCs, and there is actually a surprising amount of change over time in some of the legal forms. Here you see some gender differences in the high tech, particularly in smaller percentages of firms that are started that are limited liability corporations. We do see some of the legal form, initial legal form, kind of pointing to growth aspirations and kind of potential for growth in some of these businesses. One of the statistics I was surprised on was just the home-based statistics. So, you know, here we see that, you know, about half of these businesses in the male population are reporting working primarily in their first year. So these are literally the first couple of months out of their home with an even higher percentage of the female-owned businesses. And so, again, that kind of points to these are, you know, most likely, you know, being dominated by some of the consulting services. These are really initial stage startups, and we do track what happens to these companies over time. But you see, start to see with high-tech companies, even in the initial months of their starting, that they're reporting already having patents. So this would indicate to us, and unfortunately we didn't ask the patent question disaggregated by have you filed for patents or have you already been granted patents? And so how we interpret this, given that this is the first year of the sample, was that these companies have either just filed or are coming in with patents that have already been filed. And so that's eventually something that will actually match in patent data and provide a richer richer research there. But really interesting to see how many high-tech companies already have significant intellectual property involved very much from the beginning. I was really surprised to see that much differential in terms of even trademarks. So, you know, I don't think about high-tech companies giving particular, you know, credence to intellectual property outside of patents, but really we do see some evidence here of high-tech companies really having an early focus on all different types of intellectual property, not just patents. Employer firm, what this means is basically the percentage of firms in their initial year that had an employee who was not the business owner. So here we see that for the general population, about 43% of firms actually start in their initial year having another employee. We actually see that for the high-tech sample, that's a little bit smaller and getting particularly smaller for female-owned businesses. So, you know, again, kind of indicating that these firms are starting very small with just a couple of employees. Looking at different outcomes by gender, here you can track revenues, profits, and assets, as well as survival. You start to see some things emerge over the first 4 years of this panel. So in general, high-tech startups show a much higher percentage of survival than the general population, hovering around 80%, with actually higher survival for female-owned firms than for male-owned firms. However, you also see some really interesting things going on here. You see profits are higher for female-owned firms in the fourth year. However, assets are lower, and you see really significant differences in the reported revenues for women-owned businesses. So this is a story I must admit I'm still working through, how this all works out. But, you know, it seems to play into what it plays into, but it really seems to play into the type of financing that some of these firms are using and some of the growth potential that is, or some of the investments that are being made in the initial couple of years. In terms of primary field, I think one thing that's in the context of the overall committee and in some of the comments from Lillian that I would just point out is just the percentage. It's striking how many people with their primary field of study in the sciences are going into entrepreneurship in some capacity. So I was very surprised for for the general population that we've got about a quarter of the sample reports having their final degree in the sciences. So not something that we're really able to track very well, or do we really think about how to track? Track these things across some of the transitions. And then getting into the high tech, again, primarily dominated by business owners with science degrees. However, a large number of owners with business degrees as well. So here we start to get into capital structure, which is really one of the areas in which we've got more detailed data than is available in a lot of other resources. And I won't go into, all the detail here, but, we do start to see some interesting things emerge. So you see female-owned firms in general are getting less financing. So this is their initial year of startup. So 2004, all these businesses are brand new. The overall amount of financing for the I don't actually have that here. So you see male-owned firms are, in general, getting about $90,000 in financing, while, female-owned firms are reporting about $58,000 in financing. So here, aggregating together personal debt, debt from family and friends, investments from the actual business owners, your savings, as well as outside equity, credit cards, venture capital, angel investments, all of these topics. And particularly looking at formal equity, we start to see some things that emerge early on, and this kind of picks up on some of the earlier strands of research around, venture capital, women's access to venture capital, but also other types of formal equity. We haven't highlighted angel research, but you hear very similar stories in terms of women business owners and their ability to tap into angel investors. So there is evidence starting to emerge here that the initial structure, the capital structure that women-owned businesses are working with, is significantly different, particularly in the formal equity. So here we show that, basically on average, for the high-tech sector, these women-owned businesses are only getting about 7.4% of their initial capital from some sort of formal equity. So that would be venture capital or angel equity, which is really, really quite different from about the 20% on the male high-tech sector. So any questions on this? I know I'm getting into a little bit more detail. And yeah. Okay. Apologies. And welcome to those of you on the web.
I didn't mean to create a question. Can you just say your name as well? That'd be helpful. Because we're about to discover. I'm Carla Shepherd Rubinger, and I'm executive director of the Rosalind Franklin Society. My question is, in looking at this data on equity and capital investment, I'm curious with the rather sad outcomes for women owners, whether they're asking for less and or getting less.
Yeah. No, that's a great question. So we, unfortunately, in the initial year, we didn't ask about their initial application. We added that question last year. And we do start to see where we saw the biggest differences in the population were amongst minorities and perceptions. If you look at... Yes, yeah, in terms of reported. And it's very hard to ask about that because, it's all kind of self-perception. Or a lot of times we also ask about, I'm forgetting the exact question, but, essentially, did you not apply because, or did you not approach because of perceived? And so, yes, you do start to see some demographic differences there, particularly amongst African-American populations. I don't remember this. I think there is a gender difference, but I think it's probably stronger. It is, yeah. We do have some of that available on our website, but there is data available on applications generally from the Federal Reserve Bank, and it's definitely an area that hopefully we'll get more researchers involved over the next couple of years.
So, EJ, maybe we could take one more question.
Sure.
Could I see your data?
I think so. I didn't actually take down the slide.
My name is Alice Segugino from UC Berkeley, and. I wanted a question on the data, if we could refresh it.
Do we have the slides?
While we're getting the slides,
go ahead.
My question is, there's been a recent study on risk-taking behavior and gender differences in the financial marketplace. So I look at your data, and I look at the high debt of women in high-tech firms, and I see risk-taking there. So I'm... Yeah, so I'm curious whether you have any synthesis or any understanding of risk-taking behavior, if there are these gender differences or not, because I look at the debt and say, wow, these women are taking a lot of risks.
So we did, in this current survey, we did actually add some questions about risk, trying to get at this aspect. So how I would probably respond to that is, and this is purely...
That
one. Okay. So my suspicion is that so one of the really different variables that we actually have that I think is interesting in this context is we actually have the Dun & Bradstreet credit ratings for all of these businesses over time. And so what we see is that these businesses also, and I'm not presenting this here, but essentially the credit ratings of these, women and male and firms are very, very similar. And so, the perception of the outside of their credit supposedly their credit availability would be, you know, very high. So that's the only thing in terms of, how to – I'd want to look at that in comparison to the types of capital that they're going after. And so, one other – so this may also be where the networks come into play and the formality. So maybe that they're more comfortable – or they have established relationships with banks and so they're taking different types of risk. However, some of the venture capital and the angel risk, we don't see that evidence of that right now. All right, I'm going to move on quickly because I think I'm probably running short on time. So definitely let me know, Kitty. And. I didn't realize I wasn't running that short on time. So, all right. No worries. What did they say? You're supposed to hit with facts three different times. So apparently, you'll all remember these at the conclusion. But the risk, I do think your question on risk is a very good one. We don't have incredibly rich variables on that here, but it's something that we're also open to. And I would actually just mention this, that we do actually post a public comment period for questions. So for the next survey period, we're getting ready to actually post that in the next month. So we'll be looking at, based on the data that we've already collected, are there suggestions for questions that we should add? In particular, that's how we actually worked through last year a whole set of questions with the National Science Foundation around how companies relate to universities, how they perceive their competitive advantage from different types of intellectual property. And so we'll be going through that period through that again here in the next couple of months. All right. All right, so coming back, so that slide I showed before was their initial year. So the was their initial year financial injections. And I just wanted to kind of come back to that for the most recent year of data that we have. So this would be their fourth year of operations. And I think the thing that's important to note here is that you do see some changes, some narrowing of the differences in terms of total financial injections in their fourth year of operations. However, we still do see continuing kind of disparities in terms of formal equity. However, not nearly of the caliber that we saw in the initial year. There's evidence that perhaps maybe the sequence of events or how women-owned business owners are going about growing their firms may be quite different from male-owned firms. And so I think that's something that we'll want to try to disaggregate over the coming year. And in the aggregate, so we find over the first 4 years of the panel that about 10% of firms have report receiving formal equity at one point during the time period. So that would be venture capital or angel backing, with about just under 6% of women-owned firms in that category. So I'm going to run out of time, and hopefully not earlier than anticipated, but I'll just point out, so the data is available. We do actually offer this in two different versions. The data enclave version is actually richer and more, so this is really the version that I would encourage everyone, if you're interested in this, to get involved with, and a lot of the reports will be highlighted over the next in a monthly series from Kaufman. So in conclusion, I'll be around, and so I'm really looking forward to the next couple of days. I've already learned about some really exciting research in this area. We don't really see much that is available looking at a gender and a high-tech lens in the aggregate or in terms of data sets that are available. However, we do see that, the how gender differences appear and evolve is appears to be really significant in terms of looking at capital acquisition and other innovation-related activities. So, you know, we would like to expand some of this in terms of looking at particular growth expectations and do have some questions added there. Activities related to universities, I mentioned, haven't looked at that. And other aspects of innovation, whether open innovation or the like. And then I'll just kind of wrap up with a plug. So we're very involved in supporting the general infrastructure for data here in the U.S. So we're one of the most active, probably, commenters on everything that Census, BLS, and NSF does for the large part. And I would just throw out there that if you're interested in advocating for, you know, more gender data, this is something that we really do see in the short horizon of the next couple of years really becoming available. A lot of the research in the area is pushing from the micro-level research to now needing different, you know, matching to the individual variables that people that are involved within the research. However, you know, there's not a lot of people actually advocating to have, you know, more statistics available on different categories. So you can follow us. We do actually blog on entrepreneurship and innovation data developments, and you know, we're always happy to know what's out there. And with that, I will go ahead and wrap up, and happy to take – do we have time for any more questions?
Yes.
Okay, great. So if you have questions, please go ahead.
Are there any more questions or comments? Yes.
And again, I'm going to ask you to introduce yourself simply because there are people on the web.
Alice Agugino, University of California, Berkeley. Even though 30%, you were, I think, saying about 30% of the high-tech entrepreneurs were women, right?
Mm-hmm. I think it was actually smaller than that. It was about 18%, if I remember right.
Oh, yeah. So the 30% was in general.
General, yeah.
Okay, well, then forget my question. My question had was the theme that we're interested is in transitions.
Yep.
And if you look at the percentage of women in high tech, science, technology, mathematics, PhDs, for example, or degrees, the percentage that go in the faculty is very small.
Okay.
And so my question was going to be 30% actually is higher.
Mm-hmm.
Than what they would get the odds if they went into faculty positions.
Yeah.
If only 15%, I guess it was the flip side I was looking at. I was looking at, of the high-tech firms, the degrees that male and female looked very similar.
Yes, and so we did see,
and
yes.
And so that seemed very similar.
Yeah.
Have you looked at transitions? And this is women with high-tech degrees, mm-hmm. and, you know, how many are going into entrepreneurs, how many are going into faculty positions, and so on.
Yeah.
That's what I'm trying to try to get a handle on. And there had been a hypothesis that women that were reaching glass ceilings in industry or women who weren't able to get hired in academe were starting their own businesses, mm-hmm. and the data seem not to support that, but now that I'm looking at this, it's not clear.
Mm-hmm. No, the information available on transitions in general is just so, it's just abysmal. I mean, we can't really track, people across these things. But, however, I do foresee, I know of some research, so I know, I believe Hal Salzman, who's at Rutgers and is past Sloan grantee, is doing some research in this area, really kind of trying to look at different types of transitions and where people go. However, I think it's really going to be that's an area over the next couple of years that I think we'll start to see really emerge. You know, now there's actually the data infrastructure in place, so you can actually track business owners. You can track if they started in self-employment. I mean, there's really a great opportunity here. However, it's really going to take some high-level research, and I don't think that we have disaggregated statistics, you know, on those transitions. However, if Michael, I don't see Michael Teitelbaum in the room, but if Michael, I know he's on the agenda from Sloan. He's definitely more of an expert here than I am. But we're doing it. We're also writing an overview piece right now together. Yeah.
Hi, my name is Elizabeth Frain, Frain Consultants. And anyway, what I'm really interested in is the fact that you have all these women with some college degree experience in a high-tech startup environment, and I'm just sort of shocked at that, coming with a PhD and seeing a lot of university professors starting businesses now. So perhaps maybe these are not what you would call, you know, high-profile companies or something.
No, that's a good question. So, you know, again, I only got these statistics on Friday, so I haven't had a chance to really go into depth, but that does beg, you know, who are these companies and where, you know, what are they different, not the typical aspects of the high-tech definitions that we would, you know, think of. Yeah, very good question. Yes.
Hi, I'm Bat from the National Center for Women and IT. I run the Entrepreneurial Alliance there, and obviously we're big fans of every report that comes out, and I know recently there's been quite a few, this one plus the Anatomy of an Entrepreneur, mm-hmm. which we studied very carefully, and we're kind of curious to know first, and we're in touch with the researchers to get more analysis about the gender aspect. Mm-hmm. I had two questions. So the first one is, I know that we use a lot a statistics, I think it's from the Diana Project, mm-hmm. that came out in 2006 saying that formal funding, institutional money that went into high-tech firms, went only 9-point-something% of it went to women-led startups, which didn't really work well for me with what you showed where I'm trying to match it with the data that you had of basically women got about half of the institutional money than men.
So again, back there. So here we are aggregating VC and angel investments. I can tell you when we disaggregate it, it's not nearly half. However, you know, the sample sizes were getting small enough that we weren't really comfortable fully presenting that. So you do see some evidence that perhaps for formal equity, you know, there is some, you know, better, you know, angel investors perhaps are more accessible. However, you know, there's questions about scale and, you know, size of investments. And so, you know, definitely, you know, the Diana numbers still, you know, resonate with a lot of our statistics. However, you know, unfortunately, the venture capital-backed number of companies is so small, and so here, even having 5,000 companies, you know, you cut very, 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 very finely, and, you know, it gets harder and harder to, you know, present the statistics.
Okay, and then my second question is more, is there any analysis by region? I personally live in the Bay Area, so mm-hmm. over there, obviously, I'm assuming we see different numbers. Is there any analysis of...
So for the Kauffman Firm survey, we don't have a lot of regional analysis. We're getting ready to have a couple of analyses come out. However, it's all based upon looking at zip codes that might be similar. So since we didn't have an oversample of, say, the Silicon Valley or such, you know, we don't have a large enough sample to be able to really make statements about specific regions. However, there are other statistics becoming more and more statistics becoming available at a regional level. And I would actually just add, in terms of gender, the other component that, you know, we're really advocating for are additional regional level analyses to be produced, and sub-regional analyses in an ongoing sort of basis, because that's really where so many of the